Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. We're back with another COVID update. We've been trying to put these out Tuesday night, Wednesday morning to kind of give you all the update from the field with Dr. Joe Holly. It's just me and Joe tonight. Sam is unavailable, so we're going to go ahead and jump into just kind of getting a view from the ground from Joe with what his thoughts are of anything that may have changed since we talked last. So, hey, Joe, it's good to talk to you.
Hey, Jamie, good to talk to you as well. So things are, you know, I think settled a little bit. We're kind of in our new norm now, and most everybody's got most of the frenetic get things ready to go phase kind of over with and settling down a little bit. So tonight's a bit of a potpourri of updates, actually. And I think one of those has to do with sort of timing. And I know most states are beginning to now talk about reopening and getting folks back to work and all that sort of stuff. I think if you look at and talk to the virologist and the modeling folks and all that kind of stuff, they're all pretty much saying there's probably another 250 days to go before this thing settles down to whatever sort of steady state flu-like illness it's going to turn into, meaning that as we reopen and put folks back to work, we're going to see another surge in cases, and that's probably going to hit us late summer and fall. I don't necessarily know that that's going to overwhelm us as much as it's just going to be a lot of sick people. I think the hope is that we can reopen, get back to work, return to more normal social distancing and all that sort of stuff. And simply not exceed our medical capacity to care for the folks that do get sick from this pandemic. The other thing that's been kind of interesting is as we continue to learn more about the clinical presentations of this really fascinating virus, one of the things now that's popped up a little bit is particularly in younger folks, somewhat in kids, is a presentation that is very similar to Kawasaki disease. Kawasaki disease is an infection in kids that appears to be sort of a significant inflammatory response to a viral infection. Usually presents with some weird rashes, pretty high fevers, upper respiratory complaints, sore throat, all that sort of stuff, a lot of conjunctivitis. And the issue with it is that Kawasaki's disease forms these granulomas, which are, you know, conglomerations of inflammatory cells and that kind of stuff. And they tend to form particularly in the coronary arteries, which end up resulting in obstructive coronary artery disease in young kids. So therefore, the reason you need to pick up on this disease process early on, it causes a vasculitis. And it particularly focuses on the coronary arteries. So those kids end up with coronary aneurysms and significant cardiac disease related to that. So it's just another of the very strange presentations that this virus seems to have a penchant for. I think the other thing that we're beginning to see in kids is a presentation that has a lot of gastroenteritis type symptomatology, really more just kind of abdominal pain, some diarrhea and that kind of stuff. It certainly appears in kids that they may have the virus and they may present quite differently than adults do. And certainly with abdominal pain and diarrhea, the GI tract appears to be kind of the second most densely populated part of the body with the virus. The number one area is the respiratory system. So be aware of kids who are complaining of abdominal pain and diarrhea and that kind of stuff, as they certainly may be COVID positive. I'll stop there and just see if there's any questions on any of that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, biggest question for me is with the Kawasaki disease. I'd seen that in the news today. And my question to you would be from the perspective of an EMS provider, is there anything diagnostically we can do in the field to pick up on this? Or is this something that has to be done with some more advanced imaging and things like that in the hospital setting?
So it's pretty much at least initially, a clinical diagnosis of recognizing kind of a constellation of symptoms. These kids tend to have a fairly odd-looking rash. They have pretty significant conjunctivitis. They tend to have a pretty nasty sore throat with it. And it's a matter of kind of recognizing, high fevers for several days, and then the I think four of the five other things that we were talking about are kind of the classic definitions of Kawasaki's disease. So I don't know that it's necessarily something that I'd expect an EMS provider to pick up on. But be aware that these kids just look sicker than sort of your typical, gastroenteritis kind of and upper respiratory infection kind of kids. And certainly be thinking about that if you see fevers and a rash and upper respiratory complaints, especially if they include conjunctivitis.
Well, that's good information for us to have. I'm glad that we can at least get that information out there. It's interesting. It seems like every week we have some new ideas on presentation, some new changes in what we're seeing because we've some new symptomology has come up for these viral infections. Are there any other viruses that are as widespread in their effects like this, or is this something kind of new to the medical system?
Well, I think there's always been some, odd and very, in many cases, sort of vague complaints with viral illnesses, that include sort of weird rashes and things like conjunctivitis and, a variety of other complaints just because they affect our bodies in lots of different ways. I don't know that there's anything really special about this presentation with COVID, but certainly, Kawasaki's disease in general is a fairly rare occurrence in kids. I've seen two cases in my career. I think if suddenly you were to see four or five of those over a month, you would certainly, that would certainly come to your attention as way outside the norm. So I think a lot of this really has to do with just the frequency that we see these kind of complaints more so than necessarily the uniqueness of the complaints.
Well, Joe, we really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to let us get these updates in, short as they are. And I think that they're super informative just based upon the response I've seen in our Facebook community, as well as in our downloads and response to the podcast itself. So thank you so much. And I hope you continue to have a little bit of downtime from time to time to be able to take a load off. I know you've been busy.
I have indeed. Let me throw out a couple of other things, though, Jamie, before we go here. So there was a really interesting test that was done in Florida, and it essentially looked at sewage and attempted to ascertain the amount of viral RNA that was present in sewage, and compare that to positivity rates in the community in general. And what was noted was that the sewage effluent tested positive for COVID at about four times the rate that the general population was testing positive. Not really sure what to make of that. It's a pretty fascinating way to look at things. I think part of the idea behind this was that there is probably a lot more COVID out there than we're picking up. And we're seeing it because it is shed fairly aggressively in the GI tract. It certainly doesn't mean that, all those people may have necessarily been positive or symptomatic, but the presence of that viral genome in sewage would imply that a lot of folks may be carriers or at least have the virus in their system, whether they're sick or not. So a really interesting idea for getting some sense of the prevalence of the virus in the community, and a really novel way of looking at things, I thought. That was a pretty cool idea. One more thing related to testing, and then we'll call it a night, is there are many places around the country that have seen a significant increase in the cardiac arrest calls, particularly those that turn out to be essentially DOA. And the recommendation now is that we aggressively test DOA and cardiac arrest non-survivors for COVID, because there is a thought that many of these may be related. It's been a bit of a challenge, I think, to get those that have not survived their cardiac arrest or who were found with an absence of vital signs and an assumption that they just simply passed without really knowing whether they were related to COVID or not. So we've seen some of that sort of pop up in places like New York, where the numbers jumped by, you know, several thousand in a single day because they essentially released their testing results on a whole bunch of people that were DOA or didn't survive their cardiac arrest. And if you look at other countries around the world, it's interesting. Belgium, for example, has a very high rate of COVID, but in reality, they consider everyone who has died without some other obvious diagnosis to be COVID positive, whether they were tested or not. So they're counting their numbers a little bit differently. Again, another example of you have to take statistics with a grain of salt and really understand what it is you're looking at to make sure that we're comparing apples to apples, et cetera. So anyway, just some stuff to think about as we move forward and testing becomes more available and our ability to really look more closely. I think we're going to find this virus is much wider spread than we have anticipated in the past.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for those things. And again, we appreciate your taking the time to share this stuff with us. Like that sewage study is actually pretty fascinating that somebody thought of that. And, you know, we were looking for ways to try to look at the prevalence in a community. That's not one of the ways I would have thought of to do it. So
me neither. I thought it was a really cool idea.
Great. Well, Joe, thanks a lot. Thank you very much. Thank Paragon Medical Education Group for everything you guys have done to support the show. And we'll have a regular episode for all of you all later this week.
Thanks, Jamie. Talk to you soon.